1, 2, 3, 4.
Song Salad
with Shannon and Scott.
Welcome to Song Salad with Shannon and Scott.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Scott.
And together,
we're starring in the movie Speed 2, which was about a boat, I think.
Was there a Speed 2?
Pretty sure there was. Let's do a quick search. Speed 2, Cruise Control.
Yes!
1997. And it was a boat.
And it wasn't Keanu Reeves?
It was still Sandra Bullock, but it was not Keanu Reeves. It was Jason Patrick.
Nobody ever heard of him again. Must have blew up on the boat.
It actually made money.
Really?
It made money, but it got a 3.7 on IMDb and a 3% on Rotten Tomatoes.
3%?
That's pretty bad.
Is that the lowest percent?
No.
What
has to be lower.
What has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes?
Let's see if I can just find by the lowest. Oh, there's a lot.
Oh, really?
There's a whole Wikipedia article for the list of films with a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I would say there's hundreds.
Wow. Okay.
So not that bad, Speed 2. Stayed off that list.
Good job, Speed 2.
Well, it is another dinner break of mine, so we're going to have another very focused, very opposite of this intro episode.
I love it. Do you want to say like one interesting thing that happened to you this week and then we'll move on?
Sure. We were out at the bar the other night after a long day of tech, and there were a bunch of TVs showing different things like music videos or sports or whatever, and one TV was just showing a bunch of horses like galloping in a field. So I turned to our drummer Frank, and I like point to the TV with the horses on it joking. I'm like, oh Frank, it's your favorite show. And he goes, I love fucking horses. So from that day on, we have been making memes and Photoshop pictures of Frank saying he loves fucking horses.
Freudian slip Frank does it again.
That was the latest. What about you? Anything interesting?
No. Let's do our salad spinner.
Okay. We have a very one-sided salad spinner this week.
Yeah, we do, but it's not my fault.
No. It's not. At Kieran Sizek suggested, play your favorite song salad on the kazoo. You have a kazoo now, so you might as well use it. And I have the kazoo. You don't, so I guess you're going to have to fake a kazoo sound?
No, you should just do it twice.
Okay.
Or you should play my favorite the second
time. Yeah, okay. I'll play your favorite the second time. You want me to play my favorite right now?
Yeah, play your favorite right now, and we will spin the salad spinner to see what our... we're making a song salad, and it's a random topic and a random music genre, and we write a song about the topic in the genre, and we spin the salad spinner to see what our topic and genre are. So
made-to-order tableside salads for you.
MTO salads.
All right, I'm going to play my favorite song salad on the kazoo. Let me warm up a little bit. Okay, I'm ready.
All right, I'm going to guess what it is when you do it.
Okay.
Well, that was very obvious. So that would be the episode we did about a German film from, I believe, the 70s called Jonathan. And it was like a dystopian vampire film that we ended up watching the trailer. It was like an art film. And we ended up watching the trailer for it. And the trailer for it was so unbelievably weird.
Bananas.
And we wrote it. What's that?
I said bananas.
Oh, I thought you said and penis. I was like, I mean, like, yes. It was episode 18.
Early.
Almost a year ago. Yeah.
Wow. And it episode was drum 18. And bass. Is that right?
Nailed it. Drum and bass.
Boom.
Good job.
Check it out. All right. Let's spin. Our genre this week is boogie woogie.
Boogie woogie.
Just like the Bugle
That's
Boy.
Fun from Company B.
Poor Bugle Boy from Company A never got the recognition he deserved.
Passed up for that alliteration.
So boogie woogie is a musical genre that became popular during the late 1920s, but developed in African-American communities in the 1870s. It was eventually...
White people so far behind, as usual. Right?
It was eventually extended from piano to piano duo and trio, guitar, big band, country and western music, and gospel. And while the blues traditionally expresses a variety of emotions, boogie woogie is mainly associated with dancing. The lyrics of one of the earliest hits, Pine Top's Boogie Woogie consists entirely of instructions to dancers. Now, great. When I tell you to hold yourself, don't you move a peg. And when I tell you to get it, I want you to boogie woogie. Doesn't rhyme.
No, not at all.
It is characterized by a regular left-hand bass figure, which is transposed following the chord changes. And that's a similar bass line to what we've used in the past in like our swing episode or our rockabilly episode.
The one that's like a walking bass kind of?
Yeah, the walking bass. The boom, boom, yeah. Boom, 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 boom. That's like boogie woogie bass line. But usually it's like doubled up when you play it on piano. So it's like boom, ba 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 boom. Or through a kazoo. Like that.
Good job. What else do we need to know about Boogie Woogie?
I mean, there's a lot of history.
Might sound familiar also because Boogie Woogie tunes are 12-bar blues, which have come up several times in Song Salads, including when we did the blues, as makes sense. And 12-bar blues are, Scott can correct me on this, but it's literally 12 bars, like three lines of 4 bars of music each, that kind of becomes the bass structure of the whole song. So it's kind of like the smallest common denominator of the song.
Sure, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's the same exact structure that we had for rockabilly. It's just a earlier musical style.
Cool.
And I'm reading one really interesting thing right now about the Boogie Woogie bass lines were specific to geographical locations.
What?
So the most primitive form of the Boogie Woogie bass line was associated with Marshall, Texas. So these towns were all along a steamboat route. So people would ride the steamboat and they would stop in the towns and hear the Boogie Woogie in each of the towns, and you would know the bass line by, you know, the town you are in. So you have the Marshall bass line or the Jefferson bass line, which is from Jefferson, Texas. And they got more complex as you went around the state and around the country. And
that's really,
you know, different influences spread out from there.
So do you think that depending on what our topic is, we could like pick one of those bass lines that seem most appropriate?
We could try.
Okay.
I don't know if we'll get lucky enough to get something that really fits, but
well, we'll see. If anyone can shoehorn connection into something, it's us.
Yes. The most well-known Boogie Woogie pianist is Albert Ammons, or Ammons maybe, and his song Boogie Woogie Stomp, released in 1936, was a pivotal recording not just for Boogie Woogie, but for popular music in general, and it influenced you know, the early rock and roll guitarists such as Chuck Berry, and sort of made Boogie Woogie more mainstream.
I found it's Pine Top's Boogie Woogie.
Mm.
But it's just like talking over the music.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is.
I mean, we could do that.
We can. Just be piano Boogie Woogie song with shouting at people about whatever our topic is over the top of it. So I think things like Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy are big band songs in a Boogie Woogie style, but they're not authentic Boogie Woogie music.
Because it's not just piano?
Yeah, because they're not just piano and because they're not from the era of Boogie Woogie, and jazz genres are very much connected to eras. So
yeah.
I think that's the tricky thing about it.
Okay, well, I mean, we can still do it and just do like talk over it.
Sure. Come up with the, you know, dance instructions for whatever topic we get.
Yeah, it'll be like the Velasco or whatever we did.
Yeah, exactly.
For Alberto Velasco.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can still do this. We can't back down from the challenge just because it's not actual singing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Actually makes our job easier.
Okay. Yeah.
So our example this week is Pine Top's Boogie Woogie by Clarence Smith, who was an American Boogie Woogie style blues pianist, and it was released
1928.
And Clarence Smith died in 1929.
Yeah, he died of a gunshot wound in a dance hall fight.
That's the most like Boogie Woogie romantic thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's like a club shooting, but in 1929. And he died the day before he was supposed to make another recording. And like, there aren't very many recordings of him, actually. And he was only 24 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. Here it is.
So here it is.
And when I say hold yourself, everybody get ready to stop. When I say stop, don't move a peg. And when I say get it, everybody do a boogie woogie. Hold yourself now. Boogie woogie. Now that's what I'm talking about.
So you have to tell me what your favorite song salad song is.
What is my favorite song salad? Oh, I know what my favorite song salad is. Tiny Town.
Tiny Town Choo Choo, which was our ska episode featuring special guest Adam Hill from the Sound of Music National Tour.
Yeah, episode 25, if you want to check it out. And I get that song, not joking, stuck in my head at least once a week.
That's
it's
awesome.
Very annoying.
All right, here is Tiny Town.
Went off on a little tangent there.
I went into the bridge of the we take the choo 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 ah.
I was gonna do the oh part and then you skipped it. Oh, we gotta get out of here. Yeah. We have to stop this. This in our listeners' ears, this probably just sounds like soft farting. It's like terrible. I got Emmanuel Viome.
Oh no, are we going to have to speak French?
No, I don't think so. So, okay. Because he is French, Emmanuel Viome. He was born in Strasbourg, France, which is on the German border. And he is an orchestra conductor, and he is currently the music director of the Dallas Opera, a potential tweetable topic. I'm sure we know someone that works at the Dallas Opera, don't we?
We probably know someone who has worked there.
Yeah, and he's also the chief conductor of the Prague Philharmonia. Not the Philharmonic, the Philharmonia. Viome began his musical education at the Strasbourg Conservatory, and he continued his studies in Paris at K-H-A-with-a-hat-G-N-E.
A with a hat.
And the Sorbonne, where he studied literature, philosophy, and musicology. At age 21, he became stage manager and dramaturg at the Opéra National du Rhin. Rhin? I don't know where that is. Where he met Spiros Agaris, who was then the music director of the Festival Day du Monde in Spoleto. And then he subsequently studied conducting with Argyris and later became assistant conductor to Seiji Ozawa.
Seiji Ozawa is very famous.
Okay, I was going to say, you are much more plugged into the classical music world than I am. I was going to ask you if any of these names rang bells for you.
Yeah, Seiji Ozawa is the conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, and he has worked also with Toronto Symphony, Boston Symphony. He's done a lot.
Viome made his American conducting debut in 1990 with La Nozze di Figaro, The Marriage of Figaro, at the Spoleto Festival in the U.S., and he was named music director for opera and orchestra of the Spoleto Festival 10 years later in 2000. And he held that post for 10 years, 2001 through 2010.
We probably have friends that worked with him at Spoleto.
I'm sure we do. He made his Carnegie Hall debut in 2002, conducting the Montreal Symphony. And he conducted the Metropolitan Opera in 2004 in Madama Butterfly.
Cool.
He first conducted the Dallas Opera, which is where he is posted currently, in 1998.
We don't need all this resume.
Yeah, who cares? So, and then he started working. So his current posts are with the Dallas Opera and the Prague Philharmonia. And he was first conducted the Prague Philharmonia in October 2014.
So he's busy.
Yeah, he's a busy dude. And for whatever reason, he holds an honorary doctorate from the University of Indianapolis.
Great. Useful.
Which is like, okay, sure then, I guess. Emmanuel.
So he has an official website, which I'm on right now.
Oh my God, really?
Oh yeah. He's got his own website. He's got photos, headshots. He looks very interested in whatever he's looking at.
Ooh.
He's staring into my soul.
Is he dreamy?
No. He kind of looks like, you know, on the first season of House of Cards, the guy who's like an alcoholic.
Peter Russo.
Yeah, he looks like Peter Russo a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, he does a little bit. It's so this is so weird to be like looking at the actual like high res color photo of someone that we're talking about on this podcast.
I know, it's so rare. First Jeremy Piven, now Emmanuel Villon. Just all the stars.
Wait, I'm gonna see if he's on Twitter. And then we can read some of his tweets.
Please.
Oh, I hope he's on Twitter. Please be on Twitter.
Well, I found my favorite picture of him.
Please describe in detail your favorite picture of Emmanuel Villon.
Well, first I'm going to send it to you.
Okay.
So you can look at it too.
Okay.
How should I describe this? He's mid-sentence. He is staring directly at me. And he has his arms stretched out in front of him as if to offer me something invisible.
Wait, you didn't send it to me, so I'm just going by
it. It's still sending. It's still
sending. Oh, my God. What invisible thing is Emmanuel Guillaume offering to you?
Looks like it could be like a cantaloupe or a bowling ball. There we go.
Awesome. Oh, yes. Yeah, it looks like he's just... Okay, here's what this picture looks like, and I will tell you exactly what it looks like. If Emmanuel Guillaume were your partner in the water balloon toss at your family reunion and he was taking it really seriously and across your great aunt's backyard he was tossing you a water balloon, this is the image that would be before you when you were
just
receiving
post-toss.
The water balloon toss.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he has that look in his eyes of like, well, if we don't win, it's not a big deal and I'll tell you that, but in my mind I secretly know it's a big deal.
Yes, exactly.
So
in
that's,
reality,
that's Emmanuel.
He's probably like giving a very forceful like downbeat to the orchestra, but
to the cameraman.
Well, to the camera, sure. I am pleased to report that Emmanuel Villon is on Twitter.
Oh, good. Does he tweet often?
Oh,
here we go.
Considering his last tweet was on April 23rd, I'm going to say no. His cover photo is like a very big picture of his face.
Yeah, it's a little strange. I'm looking at his page now, too.
It is a little strange. Lots of... He retweets a lot.
A lot. Yeah.
So lots of retweeting. Lots of pictures of himself. Just so much opera. There's a very weird retweet that he has done, where he is standing with a very large man in a monk's costume.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a green room. And the man in the monk's costume is showing us his leg.
Yeah, it looks like as if Hodor were doing a striptease.
Yes, it does. That is exactly what it looks like.
And the last thing I'll say about his Twitter here is that he does have more followers than us, but not that many more than us. So... new goal is to outpace Emmanuel Villon in Twitter followers. So help us out, friends.
All right. We need like 90 people.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So Boogie Woogie and Emmanuel Villon.
Yes.
What's your first thought?
My first thought is, okay, so we've already established that Boogie Woogie, it's not really lyrics, right? It's instruction. So it's almost like a less
dance instructions.
Rhythmic. Yeah, dance instructions. So it's almost like a less rhythmic version of a hoedown, you know, like those kind of instructions that get called out dancers. So I think it actually works really well because Emmanuel Villon is used to giving instructions as the conductor of an orchestra. So I'm imagining that, okay, so what if it was like he's giving instructions... but out loud, because conductors don't talk normally when they give instructions, right?
Not during performances anyway. Conductors do sometimes give verbal instructions, but in rehearsals, not in performances.
Okay. So, but do you think, okay, Scott?
Yes.
I'm going to need your help to write these lyrics.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
I want that because I want to, here's what I want to do. I want to take the implicit instructions given by a conductor.
Uh-huh.
So like I want to translate the gestures into things that are said out loud. And then I want that to be the instruction that's over the piano.
Okay.
And it's going to be kind of funny because he's not going to be conducting an orchestra because Boogie Woogie is just on the piano.
Just the piano. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then should the music that I write follow those instructions?
Probably, unless you want him to then like start yelling.
I mean, he can yell too.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so that's what I want to happen. Do you think we can do that?
Sure. Well,
okay,
here,
cool.
I'll just start listing off the common things that a conductor tries to communicate to an orchestra.
Okay, and I will have to insist that you also describe the gesture that you would be making.
Okay.
As a conductor.
Sure. It's a little bit different depending on the conductor and your own personality, but the most like ubiquitous ones are I would say, first of all, there's the cueing of it. So
Sure. Either
bringing in the entrance of the orchestra or cueing a specific section of the orchestra to start playing something. And that mm-hmm. gesture is usually after keeping your hands still and in the air. It's really weird to describe.
Uh-huh.
You then yes. bring your hand down to start the entrance of the music or down while pointing to a certain section to start that section, if that makes
and
sense.
I think, it makes sense because I've seen a lot of conductors and I've also watched you conduct a lot of things. But what's the difference between using your hands versus using a baton?
It's, I don't really know how to say it. It's like a visibility thing in one sense. Like if you're, uh-huh. if you have a big orchestra and people in the back need to be able to see something, like seeing a white stick clearly moving is sometimes a little bit easier than seeing someone's hands. Aside from that, it's unnecessary and outdated.
Oh,
I think using your hands to conduct is better and more effective personally.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think because it's more like you can be more expressive?
Yes. You can be more expressive, more specific in your gesturing. You know, the stick kind of gets in the way, in my opinion.
Huh. Interesting. And so, are there definitely conductors that like very strongly prefer to use a stick and are kind of like beholden to it?
I mean, mostly orchestral conductors.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's just the way that the tradition is. Mm-hmm. And also, again, if it's the size of the hall that's making the difference. But even orchestral conductors, sometimes depending on the song, like if it's seen as a less formal composition, quote unquote, then sometimes they'll use their hands. And then in that sense, like if it's a fancy orchestral conductor conducting with their hands, they're doing it to like seem cool and relaxed, you know?
It's like rolling your sleeves up.
Exactly.
Okay, so start playing is one cue. What's another common cue?
The next set of cues that are most common are dynamics. So how loud or how soft you want the orchestra to be in certain sections. And the most common ways to indicate that are using your other hand that the stick would not be in, like your left hand usually.
Uh-huh.
You sort of make a like lifting up or rising up gesture. And then for getting softer, like a pushing down gesture.
Because what the stick is doing or what your other hand is doing is keeping time, right?
Usually, yes.
All right. So we've got cueing gestures. We have dynamic gestures. What else is there?
And then I think the other thing that makes watching a conductor interesting is using the rest of your body to kind of shape the musical phrases. So if you have a certain set of notes that you want to sound like are all connected together, like if you have uh-huh. four notes that are like da 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 and you don't want it to sound like da 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 da, uh-huh. you would like conduct through those four notes in one motion to indicate to the players that you want them to be smooth and connected. Whereas if you wanted them short like that, you would, with your body, be short and staccato on each of those notes.
It's like interpretive dancing.
Exactly. Instructive interpretive dancing.
Instructive interpretive dancing. Okay, so like, so I'm going to call that like expressive body language.
Yeah, exactly.
And okay, so then do you think those are like the big three categories of like how a conductor communicates with his orchestra?
Yeah, those are the main ones. And then aside from that, would be like faster or slower, but that's like kind of similar to the way you indicate dynamics of loud and soft.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cueing, dynamics, tempo, and interpretation, let's say.
Yeah.
Cool. Did I ever tell you? I'm sure I told you the story of I played violin for a very long time, very badly. And my high school, middle school and high school orchestra conductor was a raging alcoholic and would show up very, very drunk to all of our concerts. And in fact, one year got kicked off the band trip, like, because he showed up drunk at like 5 a.m. to get on the bus to like take us all to Toronto or wherever. Yeah. And he would always like come around and tune all of our instruments and like totally make them out of tune before the concerts.
Oh,
it was
no.
bad. But yeah, but during one Christmas concert one year, he was conducting with a baton and he wore these glasses, these like wireframe glasses. And he was conducting so emphatically that he hooked his baton in the like crook of his glasses and flung his glasses into the orchestra. Like basically directly into the cello section.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really impressive. What's your craziest conductor story?
It's not, the first thing that comes to mind is not a conductor story, but it's a high school band story. My friend Jesse was playing Barry sax in our high school band, and it sounded really weird when she started playing one day, and it sounded like it was like rattling and muffled, and she like didn't know what was going on, and she was like, why does it sound so weird? We had like the whole band had to stop and so she could figure out how to fix her Barry sax. And she looked down the bell, like the front opening of the Barry sax, and pulled out a bra and a water bottle.
Her bra and water bottle?
Yes. Her own bra and water bottle were stuck in the front of the Barry sax.
Oh my God. Did she remember?
She was just using her Barry sax case as like basically a suitcase and trash can as well. And things started falling into the instrument.
Oh my God. So I need to write some things.
Yes.
And are you just going to follow my instructions no matter what I say?
I think I have to, right?
Yeah.
So I'll come up with a bass, like boogie woogie tune to play on the piano. Then
okay.
Once the lyrics are put on top of it, we'll hear how it transforms.
Awesome. I'm very excited for this.
Great.
Great.
Away we go. We forgot to talk about something that is pretty weird and obvious and cool.
Okay.
Remember how we talked about there are different bass lines depending on where you are?
Oh,
and all the examples were from where? Texas. Where is Emmanuel Villon the conductor? Texas.
Yes! Oh my God.
So Marshall, Texas is a 2-hour and 40-minute drive from Dallas.
Oh my God. In Texas, that's like right next door.
Exactly. It's like right on the Louisiana border.
Okay.
Marshall. And then Dallas is a little bit more west of that. Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. I'm going to go with the Marshall, Texas boogie woogie bass line.
And you were able to find that really easily?
Yeah. It's actually just 4 beats to the bar and it keeps going up the scale as you go through the bar. So it's actually the same one that I sang earlier.
Oh.
That's the most primitive boogie woogie bass line. Just the boom, 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 boom. That's one bar. And then boom, 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 the next bar. Yeah.
Well, that worked out well. So I have lyrics, and they're not really lyrics. They're more like instructions, like we talked about.
Of course.
And I had to imagine, I mean, I had to make this interesting. It couldn't just be like me going louder, faster, stop. Because that's
harder,
not,
faster.
Yeah.
Stronger.
Because that's not very interesting. So what I decided to do is I imagined Emmanuel Villon as having a very strange personality
Okay.
Because I think conductors get a reputation for being like kind of eccentric and crazy. Am I wrong?
Not wrong at all.
Yeah. So I also took inspiration from the music director and famous conductor Robert Page, who taught at Carnegie Mellon while we were there, and who Scott, you worked with a lot. He had like all these weird sayings, and he just made so many amazing word pictures when he spoke. And I never had class with him, but a lot of my friends did. And even some of the things that he said just trickled down to me through them. And I still know Robert Page-isms, basically. So
do you have a favorite that you remember?
Drop kick me Jesus through the goalposts of life. It's a very that was a good one. Often questionable what he even meant. And I also...
It always stirred up something in you, though.
Yeah. It was very evocative.
One was, stop standing there with your mouths hanging open like a South Philadelphia shopper waiting in line for the tokens to buy the shrimp.
Wow.
And that was just off the cuff.
Such specificity.
Exactly.
Like, the writer and poet in me admires that so much. Like, what a specific image he put together for you.
He was an amazing guy.
Yeah.
And we would write down these quotes in the choral music, in the margins and things, and it would get passed down through generations of students just reading these quotes in the margins.
So good. Okay, so I tried to just, I don't have his, kind of down-home flair that he, sort of put onto things. But I tried to be, descriptive and, paint pictures with, what I wanted the music to do. So here are, I'm just going to read the instructions to you. All right. Mm-hmm. Begin playing the boogie-woogie. and then, I can't hear you. I still can't hear you. Your fingers are butterflies, and I need them to be birds of prey.
Wow.
That's too loud. Who taught you to play? A dinosaur? You're playing like this is a funeral. Faster. Come on, faster, like you're being chased by the spirit of Clarence Smith. Play like you mean it. Play like you were supposed to be making a recording tomorrow, but you got shot to death in a dance hall. And now you're sad. You are so floppy and sad and so tired. Oh, so sleepy. Shh. It's like all the baby animals on earth are sleeping inside your piano. And that's enough.
Oh, that's awesome.
So those are my instructions.
I can't wait to bend the music to fit these instructions.
Yes. So I'm hoping...
I already have ideas based on what you said.
So. Good. I'm very excited. So, yeah. So what are we gonna call this?
Oh, man. I mean...
I like your fingers are butterflies. I think that's the most... It encapsulates the kind of, ludicrous metaphor that...
Yeah.
...is emblematic of... what we're trying to do here, I think.
Great. I like it.
And as you listen to me read these instructions, you also have to picture what I'm doing with my body to express all the baby animals in the world are asleep inside your piano.
Right. Well, that's a third level conducting class kind of a instruction. So. Common.
Yeah. Okay. So here is Your Fingers Are Butterflies.
A boogie woogie song.
By Shannon and Scott.
Begin playing the boogie woogie. I can't hear you. I still can't hear you. Your fingers are butterflies, and I need them to be birds of prey. That's too loud. Who taught you to play? A dinosaur? You're playing like this is a funeral. Faster! Come on, faster! Like you're being chased by the spirit of Clarence Smith. Play like you mean it. Play like you were supposed to make a recording tomorrow, but you got got shot to death in a dance hall. Now you're sad. Where's the floppy, Sam? I'm so tired. Oh, so sleepy. Shh. Just like all the baby animals on Earth are sleeping. Enough.
Oh, I am so floppy and sad.
So floppy and sad. And so tired. Oh, so sleepy. Tired.
My fingers running over the keys like butterflies tired me out.
You know, there was a point where I could really tell that you were being chased by the spirit of Clarence Smith.
Maybe he's the ghost in my apartment.
He might be the ghost in your apartment. Moving your washcloth.
What a boogie-woogie ghost would be like.
Probably
awesome. I'll be scared. Now a little less scared than that.
Now boogie woogie, but don't move a peg.
Now look for your pillows. Are they on the bed? Boogie woogie now.
That would be the most annoying ghost. You'd be like, I'm trying to sleep, please. Please boogie woogie ghost.
A ghost that just wants you to dance.
Yeah.
Unfinished business.
Unfinished business. The boogie-woogie business. I mean, if anyone had unfinished business, it's Clarence Smith. He was supposed to go to the recording studio the next day and got shot.
Who knows? It could have been the most successful boogie-woogie song of all time. We don't know what to do.
I know. Anyway, this was a weird one, huh?
Took a turn. Yeah. We went with it.
We did. So should we tweet this at Emmanuel Vium?
I don't think he'd understand.
Yeah, I don't either. Especially because all he does is retweet pictures.
Yeah, I just want to say, Dave, my brother, don't tweet this at Emmanuel Vium.
Please don't.
Please. You feel free to tweet this one at Jeremy Piven.
Yeah, go for it. Especially because, like, I don't know, like, this, for whatever reason, this one more than any other, since we have friends who actually do like work in opera regularly, I feel like this is the one that could like actually somehow get back to the person. But anyway, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, we really appreciate your dedication and your interaction with us on Twitter,
which you can find us there at Song Salad Cast, and feel free to send in your salad spinner suggestions. I think we still have maybe one or two more. I'm not exactly sure.
A couple, yeah.
Yeah. But still, we take them and we squirrel them away like a squirrel.
Oh, okay. Squirrel them away like a squirrel.
Saving acorns for the winter, for the dark days of winter. So please send us your suggestions. We love it. And if you review us on iTunes, we will give you a shout out on the show because we really appreciate it and it helps people find us. All right, I think that's it.
Once again, if you're in the San Diego area, come see Escape to Margaritaville, starting previews on Tuesday. Tomorrow, actually, once this comes out.
That's amazing. And you can go find Scott and be a super fan of Scott in person.
You know that I narrowly missed seeing Ethan Helvering, one of our listeners.
Really?
He was in San Francisco and saw Hamilton about 2 days after I left.
Oh, no. It held us. Yeah, he was a listener who gave us a review on iTunes and was super nice about it.
I know.
But we're real people and we really like other people. And so if you're in the area, hit us up.
Talk to us.
Yeah.
All right. Until next week.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Scott.
And together, we're
like sleepy animal babies.
Inside a piano.
Trying to avoid getting hit by hammers.
So floppy. So sleepy.
Now boogie woogie.